I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from Dubai in the UAE. Millions of Ukrainians have fled to NATO nations because of the NATO proxy war with Russia. But what about the millions displaced because of US-led invasions in countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya and Syria, or interventions in Central and Latin America? On Going Underground recently, a former advisor to US authorities argued for more militarization of the border, characterizing the frontier between Mexico and the USA as the greatest border crisis in US history. But Todd Miller takes a different approach, following the money. The author of Build Bridges, Not Walls, A Journey to a World Without Borders, joins me now from Tucson, Arizona. Todd, thanks so much for coming on. As I was saying, it was Todd Bensman. He came on the show, and I did try... He's testified in Congress about immigration. He claimed the US doesn't need that many more immigrants, sort of, but he certainly said, look, you know, it's the law. That's what those who want less immigration are talking about. It's just the law, and the fact the United States needs more or fewer immigrants is by the by. All these illegal immigrants are coming, and this is the biggest crisis. What do you think?
When I hear those sorts of sentiments and statements, I immediately think to, you know, there's in the United States, there's pretty powerful forces that are for... more border fortification, more and very, and you know, I guess the term to use is anti-immigrant, right? The or against the idea of more people crossing into the United States, and those sorts of arguments, the argument that you just laid out is definitely coming straight from that. That's what I immediately think of when I hear those sorts of arguments.
But you'd agree with them in saying that it is the worst border crisis in U.S. history, just from a different perspective.
I hesitate to use the word crisis. The word crisis is used quite a bit with the border. It's almost become a little bit cliche, to say the least. The way that the word crisis is used is so often used, oh, there's people just coming over the border and it's a chaotic and we have to put the fist down. But if I were to argue it was a crisis, the perspective that I would take would be of that of looking at it from another angle. It's more of a crisis, you could say, of militarization, a crisis of a place that looks unrecognizable, really, from what it did 25 years ago or 30 years ago. If you're to follow the last three decades and how extensively the border has been fortified and militarized, and really focusing on different cities and towns that are on the border and building up walls and putting up towers and putting up border patrol stations. And there's some places on the border where you see more border patrol than you do local residents, right? And then the kind of consequences you see, and the consequences there are many consequences, but I could name two really important ones. One is the kind of strategy that the border, the militarization of the border, how it's been deployed. The strategy's been through what's called prevention through deterrence, and not to go into this too long, but the whole idea simply is to fortify certain areas of the border, which then force people to circumvent and go through places like the Arizona desert. And I live in Arizona, and every year, and this year is no exception, people crossing the border die because they can't carry enough water or enough food. And the other part of it is local residents. You go and talk to local residents in Arizona, and go to El Paso, go to the borderlands of New Mexico, go to the borderlands of California, and you will hear people complaining about Border Patrol checkpoints. You'll hear people talking about home invasions, the Border Patrol coming into their homes.
Yeah, I want to get to a particularly awful episode in South Arizona. I know you're in Arizona in a moment. And I want to get to some denials of that from the U.S. Administration, from Joe Biden and from the administrators there. I have to say this on Going Underground quite a bit lately, given that tens of billions of dollars of U.S. public money is going to fund weapons sent to Ukraine. And we're not giving investment advice here. But if anyone were to read your many books on the border, clearly there are particular companies, defense companies, arms companies, making masses of money out of this border, in inverted commas, border crisis. Which companies are the ones people should invest in? No. Which are obviously making a lot of money out of this, and what they say arguably is echoed through mainstream media, think tanks, policymakers, and academic institutions.
Yeah, that's a sad thing. I could give some investment advice right here, because the border industry is a growing industry. It's been a growing industry, particularly since 9/11, particularly since 2001. I have helped write reports looking at the different companies that have been, that are the top profiteers of the top contractors, we should say, that are getting on the U.S.-Mexico border particularly. But I want to stress that these contractors are, you know, not only on this, on the U.S.-Mexico border, but around the world in different border areas. But some of them are names that probably your viewers will find familiar, like Lockheed Martin has one of a very big contract working with fixed wing aircraft of the U.S. Border Patrol. You have Northrop Grumman, which is another big military contractor, who this company has gotten contracts around biometrics. They're developing a new biometric system known as HART. And that's the future when you're looking at that sort of thing. You're looking at iris recognition, facial recognition, you know, those sort of advanced databases that, you know, store people's information, that sort of thing. And those are just two companies. There's lots of different companies. There's companies, there's smaller companies that
okay, well, I mean, obviously they'd all say they abide by the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And all of them would say they're merely trying to make things safer to enforce U.S. law. And U.S. Customs and Border Protection says, guided by the highest ethical and moral principles and exhibiting the highest level of professional responsibility, CBP, the Customs and Border Protection Force employees, strive every day to maintain the public trust and instill the confidence of the communities we serve and protect. That's what they say.
That's a great public relations line. I'm sure that's, you know, that's exactly what you would expect to hear from Customs and Border Protection. You wouldn't expect them to talk about, you know, the different sorts of things that go on the border, the people dying coming across the border. But those, that of course, that's the line that we often receive directly from Customs and Border Protection. But I want to say that sort of line goes way beyond that. It's in Washington as well. Like you can see it embedded in terminology used around the border, like border security. Border security is a term that's used very often, yet it's a word that if you start to unpack it and see what it really means and see does this border fortification, tremendous border fortification, create security for people? No, definitely not for people crossing the border, since the deterrence policy is about people being put into more insecure or even mortal situations, and definitely not necessarily secure for people living along the border who are complaining more and more of increased border patrol presence. So what is the word security? What is this border security? I think there are questions that need to be asked about how the sort of public relations line is, the sort of terminology that goes unquestioned and unpacked, and then subsequently the need to then unpack that terminology. Let's see what this border security thing is. Let's see what kind of impacts it has on people. Let's look at the money. Like the knowledge of the money that's put into the border is nil. Like when I've talked about this for years and years and years around the United States, it's amazing how few people actually know the dramatic increases of the budgets put towards the border.
Okay, well, it's not at $2 trillion level of Afghanistan's the war in Afghanistan.
No.
Yet,
no,
arguably. Not that high. But I suppose what, and perhaps Afghanistan withdrawal meant that some corporations thought this was a way of importing profits back to the homeland after the defeat of the United States in Afghanistan. But given immigrants disproportionately want to work, why would corporations be lobbying on K Street against more immigrants. I mean, clearly the defense contractors have an interest in this border myth, I suppose you might put it, and use that to be able to profiteer by all this border infrastructure. But generally, surely corporations would be saying we want more immigrants because they need desperately workers to fill all the vacant jobs in the United States.
Sure. Yeah. So you will find. Well, on one hand, the lobbying, like when a Homeland Security budget comes up, you will see all these contractors. They'll go in behind closed doors. They're lobbying, you know, all the key people, the appropriations committees, and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, you know, you see, like, if you look at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, or you look at other, you know, sectors with interests, you know, you'll see lobbying for more of a comprehensive immigration reform that would include, you know, bringing in more people.
Because corporations depend on illegal immigration right now, right? U.S. corporations.
Yeah, so you...
I mean, some of them might go under if there weren't illegal immigration.
That could very well happen. The state of Alabama, when they put out that law, maybe it was 10 years ago, it was a sort of, you know, papers, please law in which they were going to go after all undocumented people in the state. And there's some really good reporting of what happened after everyone left, like lots of undocumented workers left the state of Alabama, and the sort of state it left the agribusiness and agri-industry in Alabama during that time.
And I mean, has Joe Biden been worse? $25 billion giveaway of public funds to enforce the border, as they call it, the largest ever, versus Trump, who's still if he's allowed to run, given the U.S. authorities attacking your leading opposition leader in the United States. Is Biden worse than Trump as regards the treatment of those seeking a better life and seeking asylum?
Well, it's right. I mean, the budget for 2023 was actually $29 billion. If you look at Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which the jump from approximately $25 to $26 billion to $29 billion was almost the amount that Trump spent in his full increase during the full 4 years of the Trump administration. So looking at budgets, like you look at rhetoric, like I like to, as a journalist, I like to look at, there's rhetoric and then there's hard numbers and budgets and what's really happening. And if you look at what's been going on with the Biden administration, the budgets are increasing. They're not taking down, even with all the critique of the big wall that Trump was building during his administration, they're not taking down that wall. In fact, I work for an outlet called the Border Chronicle. We put out a piece looking at how the Biden administration is actually, quote unquote, filling in the gaps of the wall. In other words, continuing to build the wall. But not only that, they're looking at putting more technology, surveillance technology on the border. And you can see the kind of increases of budget and this kind of creation of a virtual or technological border that's happening under Biden. So it's instead of the heavy rhetoric, the we're going to stop people from crossing the border, that sort of thing that you got under Trump with this building of this wall, with Biden, you have a lot less of that sort of rhetoric, anti-immigrant rhetoric. Much more, they're much more quiet about it. There's much more of a humanitarian language in which it's narrated. Yet at the same time, the same exact border enforcement apparatus is in place. And in fact, it's getting bolstered and bigger. And the same sort of impacts are happening on people crossing the border and people living in the borderlands. So what is the difference, right?
Well, Todd Miller, I'll tell you what Biden says in part two. I'll stop you there. More from the co-host of the Border Chronicle podcast and author of Build Bridges, Not Walls, after this break.
All the bulk of the people of Pakistan have always resented undue foreign influence on our policies. And they have focused on the U.S., partly because the U.S. is a major global force, but it also has played a critical role at different points in Pakistan's history.
The Biden administration and NATO world are fascinated with soft power and rhetorical shifts. Remember, Ukraine will win, and Ukraine is winning. Now we hear Russia is losing, and even Russia has lost. Narrative manipulations do not change hard reality.
Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the co-host of the Border Chronicle podcast and author of Build Bridges, Not Walls, A Journey to a World Without Borders, Todd Miller. Todd, you were saying in part one that Biden is maybe worse than Trump when it comes to the pain and misery of the immigration situation on your southern borders. Biden said in January this year, I sent Congress a comprehensive piece of legislation that would completely overhaul what has been a broken immigration system for a long time, cracking down on illegal immigration, strengthening legal immigration. And then he slagged off the GOP for not helping him out on his big plans. I mean, that's what he says. And you know, he even says people come to America for a whole lot of reasons, to seek new opportunity in what is the strongest economy in the world. Can't blame them wanting to do it. They flee oppression. There's the great Joe Biden running for 2024's nomination at the primaries.
Well, that's good campaign something, right? That's what it sounds like to me.
How do you square those?
Yeah, you don't. I mean, you probably could go back and go back to 2016 and hear Hillary Clinton say the same thing when she was running, or Barack Obama saying, I mean, not exactly the same thing, but it's very similar things. Like, we are going to bolster legal immigration and cut down on illegal immigration, and you know, those sorts of really the same thing that just spins, or the same sort of sentences that spin around and in a circle, and they just keep being repeated and repeated as yet again the budgets just keep going, getting higher and higher and higher. It helps Biden out, you know, considerably that Trump was right before him, because the kind of media scrutiny that he's going to get on the border is considerably less, given the scrutiny that Trump got. But nothing really fundamentally has changed, except for, I do want to say one thing that differentiates a Biden from a Trump in a fairly major way is the rhetoric, and the way that the rhetoric can fan the flames of, you know, different sort of groups or different constituencies. Particularly, we on the U.S.-Mexico border, we have a problem with militia groups that will go down and patrol the border on their own.
So, in other words, we can expect far-right militias to increase if Trump is reelected president and Biden loses, arguably. But then, given that the media representations, well, if they're corporate-owned, obviously they get their funds perhaps through a network that involves some of these military companies. But given the connection then between the sources of the immigration, as Biden said, they flee oppression, and we know Biden was vice president during the interventions in Haiti, Libya, so on under Obama. Do you think it should be priced in when they do the interventions? I mean, the media should say, as they cheerlead the wars, should say, obviously there will be this extra cost, given the immigrants that will then come from Afghanistan, Libya, Iraq, Syria, I mean, going back further than Haiti and Venezuela to El Salvador, Nicaragua, you name it.
Oh, they don't matter. It's interesting to look at how the media depicts people coming to the border, and I'm talking mainly, you know, the corporate media. It's almost as if people come out of a complete vacuum, like nothing has happened before that for them to arrive at the United States border. And And just thinking of just what you were mentioning, you know, the endless interventions that the United States has had, military interventions throughout Latin America over the centuries, military interventions, and I would argue economic ones as well, and this sort of economic, neoliberal economic model that's been kind of strangleholded or clamped upon places like Guatemala and El Salvador and Dominican Republic and you name it, and where U.S. companies that would go and get use cheap labor in different places around Latin America and the Caribbean, those sorts of, that sort of quote unquote invasion, right? This sort of how companies can cross borders, how militaries also can cross borders, start wars, shoot people, go and pay people miserable rate wages, take over land, take over people's water sources, not to mention the climate aspects, which we could talk about as well.
If you're a journalist in the newsroom covering the border crisis, as it's called, it'll no doubt, as we approach the 2024 election, as we get closer to it, we're going to hear more and more about the border. I mean, surely they know that. The journalists know. I mean, I know that a lot of them just go, oh, it's a dictator in Latin America, that's why they're fleeing them. But they also know all of these other ideas and the historical ideas behind it, don't they? As to why there are hundreds of thousands of people going across the U.S.-Mexico border.
There are some.
Every day.
It's amazing how often, like, there's a certain amount of talking points that are regurgitated. Like in Central America, it's violence, right? You just say, oh, there's violence in Central America. Oh, the gang problem. And it's left at that. And then that leaves no sort of ability to analyze the situation from a perspective of U.S. foreign policy, which in my view needs to happen.
So it's a win-win for these defense arms companies because they can involve themselves in interventions, in setting up governments in Latin America, and then they win profits from the refugees fleeing the misery and violence at the other end. Tell me about this Tohono O'odham tribe, because in South Arizona, there's horrific body cam footage. He was shot, Ray Matia, shot on the 18th of May. A tribal, a member of the Tohono O'odham tribe, shot by the Customs and Border Protection police. I mean, away from that actual case, how emblematic is it of the whole idea of the idea of a border? In any case, the fact that tribal Native Americans are being shot by border police, really in their own country, in the United States.
It reminds me immediately of Reese Jones, who's a geographer's book called Violent Borders, where the book is about how borders, implicit in borders, are violence. And that the case of Raymond Matias on the Pono-Ottom Nation, which is located actually in southern Arizona. It's the size of the state of Connecticut, if anyone was wondering how big it was. And it borders on Mexico, but you should keep in mind that the ancestral land of the Tohono-O'odham go deep into Mexico. So it's the border crossed them and was imposed upon the Otom. What happened with Raymond Matias is one of the worst cases that
because we have the body cam footage to be able to see it.
Right.
And, you know, what we hear about internationally is how wonderful multicultural consciousness is in the United States under the Joe Biden administration, celebrating diversity of these Native Americans and, you know, completely separate to what anyone would say as regards emblematic killings by border forces. How does the military cultural industrial complex play into all of this, whether it be Hollywood and cultural ideas that are exported internationally, saying, come here, because look, everyone's free and wonderful, with wonderful standards of living in the United States, versus also this United States that has these tribes, because, it, you know, people won't have heard of the Tohono O'odham tribe in South Arizona, which you say is so big in terms of what land they lost.
Yeah, it's big because the way that the border is depicted culturally, often away from the border, is almost as if it's empty space or that nobody lives there. or it's just a place where people are crossing, or it's a place where there's just violence happening just because it's there. And the fact that, you know, Indigenous people live along the border, of course they do. Like the border itself was a colonial process. The imposition of the border was, it crossed many Indigenous territories, including the Tana'atam.
But this won't be, in the run-up to the 2024 election, what's being discussed, the issue of the concept of the U.S. southern border. It'll be how to keep immigrants out, presumably.
That's what it's trending towards. It doesn't seem like the Biden administration, rhetorically, when they first took office, they were very much about, oh, we're going to stop this, we're going to do this, we're going to stop building, we won't build one more foot of wall. And while some different little policies have been shifted, it's almost the same. And the rhetoric has now shifted to, we're going to abandon what Trump was doing, to more of, it seems like the Biden administration is responding to this idea that they think that the public's going to want more border fortification, and will probably take, you know, that sort of line, which will imply the kind of status quo of the border, which means we keep bolstering it, which means the same companies we're talking about will still be getting their contracts, which means we'll be heading towards even more technological borders, with surveillance cameras and drones, and they're talking about UGVs, which are unmanned ground vehicles, and the biometric systems, that those sorts of the like having facial recognition cameras attached to drones, or unmanned aerial vehicles, the ones that fly, are in the works, or at least they're experimenting with them. And so I can just see that, you know, as we go into 2024, I don't see any sort of radical shift of like a Biden administration saying we're going to do something drastically different on the border. I hope I'm wrong about that. I hope there's more pressure for them to reconsider some of their positions. But practically speaking, that's where I think they will go.
Todd Miller, thank you. That's it for the show. Remember, we're bringing you new episodes every Saturday and Monday. Until then, you can keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you soon.